Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Odegaard, Odegaard, golazo!
Is Arsecast Extra.
Hello and welcome to another Arsecast Extra, as always, with James from Gunnerblog. James, goodly morning to you.
Oh, goodly morning, Andrew. Very, very glad to have one.
Me too. I'm going to start with a question. I know we do questions in part two, and we are going to do questions in part two, but I feel like I need to ask this straight away, right?
Yeah.
What are we like? What are we like? Why?
I don't know why. I was going to say, I don't know why we do this to ourselves. I don't know why they do this to us.
That's it.
It's cruel.
That's it. We're the unwitting victims. We have these crimes perpetrated upon us. This stress, this emotional baggage that they make us carry around for, you know, the rest of our lives. I mean, we can talk it out. It's cathartic. People can listen. It's cathartic. But you feel it. It's there. It's a weight. It's always with you, isn't it? It's always with you in every aspect of life.
How many minutes were there between them equalising and us going back in front?
Hang on, let me have a look. Be like 20.
20, yeah. And that was a bleak 20 minutes, let me tell you, especially on social media. I don't know if you were on social media, but, things got dark in that period.
I was doing the live blog and it was just... I was just trying to work out why. I mean, it's mad, isn't it? The extent to which this is mad is evident in the fact that we won a European game away from home, scored three fucking good goals. By any measure, by any standard, that is an incredible result. But the first thing that I'm thinking this morning when I'm talking to you and I was writing the blog was like, God, fuck. I mean, what more can they do to make our lives so hard?
I know. It was stressful. It was a stressful period. And it's a cumulative effect, isn't it? I think had this happened in isolation, then I think maybe you'd be like, I can compartmentalise that. But for it to be so similar to the goal, you know, that we gave away at Burnley, such a similar type of mistake. And at the end of a long run in which we seem to be just repeatedly shooting ourselves in the foot. I mean, we are sort of oozying ourselves in the foot at this point.
Cannons, literally.
Yeah.
Cannons. I mean, you know, everyone can make a mistake. We know that. But if you make mistakes all the time, what's that? I mean, there's got to be a name for that. What?
When they redid the Arsenal badge, was there not some controversy because they turned the cannon the other way? And did we inadvertently point the gun back at ourselves?
Sorted out. The branding department, the logo department at Arsenal, just sorted out. We need new kits, new logo. Just revert to the old one. Anyway.
It's stressful. But listen.
It really is.
There is good news. It is a good result.
It's a great result. 3-1 away from home, 3 away goals. It is a great result, you know, and the goals were fantastic. And we started the game brightly and the positives, you know, are there in that, you know, we started brightly. We made chances. Okay, we didn't take the chances. Been there, done that, worn that T-shirt plenty of times. Scored a great goal, went ahead, in control of the game. Did the thing we do, which made everyone feel unhappy and sad and worried and bleak and angry and all those kind of things. And then we finished the game strongly, which isn't something that we've been doing this season a great deal. So, you know, there's positives in that as well. So, yeah, I mean, where do we start with this one? Do we talk about the mistake and then talk about the good stuff? Do we talk about the good stuff and then talk about the mistake? I mean, it seems like we've started on the kind of mistake thing, so we should probably tease this out to the fullest extent.
Let's do it. I mean, by the way, I've got to say, there was a really funny sort of Freudian slip. We had Steve Sidwell on our commentary, I don't know if you did as well.
Same.
And there was a point where he was talking in the first half, this was, about Arsenal playing out from the back. Maybe it was after the David Luiz error, which, of course, was nearly another concession of a goal from a mistake playing out from the back. But he said, you know, Mikel Arteta, he likes this risk over reward strategy. And I was like, I mean, it's supposed to be risk, you know, risk versus reward, but it does feel like risk over reward with us sometimes.
Yes, it does. So look, the mistake that we made, we discussed the goal that we conceded against Burnley at the weekend, and both of us agreed that Bernd Leno wasn't really culpable for it. It was on Granit Xhaka. It was his mistake, you know, because of the way we were playing. How do you feel about Bernd Leno's role in this one? Because I'm not feeling quite as generous towards him.
No, I'm not either. And funnily enough, we did Handbrake Off, my adulterous podcast with The Athletic the other day, and I expected Lee Dixon, no comment from Andrew, I expected Lee Dixon to absolutely batter Granit Xhaka, to be quite honest with you. And he said something very interesting where he was like, for me, I think it's a Leno error. And he said, the reason I believe that is because he gives Xhaka the ball on his left foot, which forces him to take a touch. If he gives it to him on his right, he can play it first time. I hadn't really thought about it from that perspective.
I'd have to watch it again just to...
I'd have to watch it again as well. But yeah. I thought it was an interesting point. On this one, and I've not studied it in quite the intensity that I did the Xhaka one because I had more fun rewatching the nice goals we scored, I felt Leno was substantially more culpable. What about you?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the passage of play is quite interesting because I think it starts with an Arsenal throw and we go backwards. And then there's a moment where I wonder, Ceballos plays it backwards, goes to Luiz, to Gabriel, and then to Xhaka, and he sort of turns back inside, which blocks off the ability to play the pass out to Tierney, which I think is where he should have gone. But in this one, yeah, look, that's a mistake by Leno. It's bad play by Ceballos. The decision making is poor there for sure.
Luiz is the pass for Leno, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. And, you know, even if he really felt a bit worried about that one, I think it's possible he could have played it to Gabriel, who could easily have just hoofed it down the pitch if he'd wanted. So he did have a couple of options there. But he played it to a man who was in trouble. I mean, did you watch Mikel Arteta after the game? Did you watch his interview on BT Sport?
Not as jolly as you might expect for a manager who's just won 3-1 away.
Well, that was exactly it. I mean... his face was that of thunder, really. Like, you know, I was looking at him going, ooh, I wouldn't like to make him cross at me or anything because he looks angry. And like you say, for a guy who's led his team to a 3-1 away win, you know, the kind of win that we were looking for in this game, you know, he was really, really unhappy with what he'd seen. And I think that mistake obviously was weighing heavily on him and, you know, what he's asking the players to do. And not for the first time he was asked about it, you know, but he talked about decision making and knowing when to make the right pass. So I do wonder who he had in mind for the goal last night and for the goal against Burnley as well.
Yeah, I mean... watching it back, it's not a great bit of play from Granit Xhaka, I think, in the build-up. I think he, you know, he does go backwards and he doesn't exactly give it to Gabriel on his front foot. He makes him turn and face his own keeper. Mm. But, you know, he's still pretty comfortable there. I think it is... it's Leno's decision-making. And I guess what's interesting about this, we always think about playing out from the back and we think about it from, like, a technical perspective. You know, can the player pass the ball well, but actually it's the selection of pass that's almost more important, right? Almost any professional footballer, goalkeeper, outfield player can play a 15-yard pass. It's about being able to read what's in front of you,
yeah,
and, you know, interpret that and make the correct call.
Yeah.
Maybe we're seeing that Leno has a way to go on that front.
Yeah, or maybe, you know, that's a flaw in his game.
Yeah.
It could be,
yeah,
you know.
I mean, that's what I nearly said, but then I pulled back. I thought, you know, let's give him the opportunity. He seems to improve.
Yeah, I mean, look, the thing is, yeah, Arteta's not going to change, or certainly isn't going to radically change the way he wants his team to play. But until such time as he has the players to do it reliably, is there a need for him to perhaps... Well, I don't know. What do you do? I mean, do you compromise your principles in terms of the way you want to play for practical reasons? Do you work harder on the training ground? I mean, I'm just watching the video was it had rolled on from the goal there, and there's a passage of play where literally just afterwards, Xhaka kind of nutmegs a guy. We have a throw in. Xhaka nutmegs a guy on the left-hand side to get himself out of trouble, then plays a pass to Willian. He's looking for passes. Plays a pass to Willian, who plays it directly to an Olympiacos player, and luckily the ball bounces our way. So, mm-hmm. You know, I don't know whether this is something that is, you know, when we do this, it scrambles our brains or what. But, I mean, how do we deal with it now? Is there a case for, you know, on the training ground, going through some drills where, okay, if you don't see the perfect pass, or if you're unsure about the pass, you go long if you're Bernd Leno or something like that. I don't know. I mean, how far can the manager bend, you know, the way he wants to play to suit the players he has? Or does he have to just keep doing it and upgrade on the players who make these poor decisions?
Yeah, I mean, the funny thing is, I think there have been games where he has bent the rules a little bit and he has let Leno go a bit longer. And it's tended to be when Nicola Pepe's played. I think there was a game at Southampton, you know, where he used Pepe as the target aerially quite a lot and it was quite successful.
And Leeds as well, wasn't
Leeds,
it?
Leeds, yeah. Maybe that's the one I'm thinking of. But I suppose without Pepe in the side, there's not an obvious out ball, and you wouldn't even necessarily say Pepe's an obvious one, but he actually does okay at it.
Yeah.
But without that, without maybe Lacazette, or I don't know where you're aiming those long kicks. So that's part of the issue. But I struggle with this because it's, you know, yes, it is the manager's style, but surely there has to be a role for kind of player initiative as well.
You know,
Leno's last two games, he's played a bit like he's going to be fined if he goes long. And I sort of think there has to be a degree to which there has to be a responsibility with the players to interpret the situation and not just adhere dogmatically to the rules, you know?
Yeah, well, I think that's what Arteta was saying.
Yeah.
But I wonder, you know, as you say, has there been some pressure on Leno to play in a certain way that is impacting the decisions that he's making, where he's reluctant to go long because he might get in trouble, for want of a better word, from the manager? I don't know, but maybe that's part of it.
Maybe. I mean, I think there are opponents where Arteta really does seem to be absolutely insistent on this, and I think clearly Burnley and Olympiacos were two of those. The issue is Olympiacos had obviously watched the Burnley game, hadn't they? And, you know, when Tsubarez gets that ball, he's got a box of players around him. It's like basically four players, three who are pretty close. And, you know, we walked into the trap, essentially.
Yeah. We're not smart.
We're not. And then let's not forget, you know, we nearly give away another one in the first half, don't we?
Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, what is that? What is that? I mean, you're getting towards halftime. I mean, I'm sure Orbino has a stat somewhere about how many goals we concede just before halftime. There must be in his doom stats collection of Arsenal this season. But, you know, it's just unbelievable that an experienced player, like if he was a 19-year-old centre half and he made that kind of mistake, you go, OK, well, it's not good. But, you know, he's a young guy. He's learning his trade, et cetera, et cetera. But this is basically the most experienced guy on the pitch.
And it's a bad first touch that does him, basically.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I don't know what was I don't know what was in his head. I don't know why he thought that was a good idea. It beggars belief that an experienced player in particular, witnessing what happened against Burnley on Saturday, would conspire to do something quite that idiotic. Mm. You know, it's just, I don't get it. I don't get how, it's hard to trust them, isn't it? You know, it really is hard to trust them. So
it is. I mean, you know, it seems so banal to say, but my God, we've got to cut it out, because it's going to, you know, like we say, we're just sort of shooting ourselves in the foot time after time after time. And, you know, we scored a few worldies last night that made the result look a lot more palatable. But had we not done, we would have been absolutely cursing that error.
For sure. For sure. I mean, you know, if you can see just before halftime, you still have a half to go. But, you know, I think the other thing that before we move on and let's talk about the good stuff, I think the other thing that we have to point out is that when we do this to ourselves, we give the opposition so much and it takes so much away from us. You could literally see the life drain out of us and into Olympiakos.
Yeah,
you know, we are
pushed on and scored again.
Yeah, they could have scored another goal. So it's not simply that we give a goal away. It's that we shift the entire momentum of a game away from ourselves, games that we've been in control of, and all of a sudden we're having to work to scramble back. I mean, you think about what we did against Benfica, for example. You know, we really make life a lot more difficult for ourselves, and we're like a shot in the arm for the opposition, you know? It goes beyond just making those mistakes and it costing us a goal. It costs us a lot more because it takes time and effort to get the momentum back.
Very true. And I suppose the only thing I can say about last night is there was a period a couple of weeks ago where it felt like every single thing we got wrong was punished in the most harsh way possible. At least we didn't get punished quite as harshly as perhaps we should have been for some of our defensive mistakes last night.
That's your silver lining, is it?
Yeah, that's my silver lining. The luck's coming back round our way. But listen, let's turn it around and focus on the good stuff, because for, you know, the vast majority of this game, we were good and the better side.
Oh, yeah.
And created a lot of chances.
I mean, they're a very ordinary side. Very ordinary. And, you know, it's good that we started the game brightly. I mean, we'll talk about Odegaard's goal. I think he was having a difficult performance, really, until that time, because, you know, he missed that early chance that Kieran Tierney set up for him. He scuffed it wide, and he really should be doing better there. There was a giveaway, I think, where he played the ball to an Olympiacos player. There was another one where I think he tried to play, or Xhaka played the ball to him, and he was caught in his heels, and things just weren't coming off for him.
There was a bit of a grumpy exchange between him and Bellerin down on the right-hand side. I don't know if you remember that there was a misunderstanding.
Oh, yes. He gave it to he should have played the pass to Bellerin a lot earlier, and by the time he played it, Bellerin was offside, yeah.
Yeah, and I agree with you about the early chance. To be honest, last night for me is the story of two tweets that I didn't send. And the first one was after he missed his first chance, Odegaard. And I drafted a tweet that said, a lot about Odegaard reminds me of Ozil. And I've said that before. But unfortunately, one of those things is his shooting. Right?
Right.
I didn't send that. And it paid real dividends because he then absolutely leathered one in from 30 yards. There was one about Mohamed Elneny when he was about to come on where I said, he'll show you he's going to come on and score from 40 yards. Because tongue-in-cheek, I didn't believe it happened.
Of course.
And I ultimately decided that both were going to invite so much trolling that they weren't worth it. But I'm glad I didn't do it on the Odegaard one because, he's had a few opportunities to shoot in games. Mm. I always think of that one at Aston Villa that he skied, and this was from a similar position. He also, he's sort of become the de facto guy who's, when we get a free kick on the edge of the box, is stood near it for a bit and then walks away.
Rather him than David Luiz.
Yeah, true. But he's sort of always in the mix but doesn't get a go.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, well, you know, has he got this shot in his locker or not? Mm. And maybe a bit of the frustration of the game he was having played into the decision he took to take that shot on from that range. Oof. But wow, what a hit.
yeah, brilliant. Absolutely cracking shot. I mean, the goalkeeper was just, I think I said today on the blog that the goalkeeper was flapping at it like a guy driving down the motorway who realizes there's an angry wasp in the car with him. You know, he could try to get it. It just could not get near it. I mean, you know, you could, I think if the shoe were on the other foot or if the gloves were on the other hands, you might look at your own goalkeeper and say, probably should do better there, but I want to give Odegaard the credit because it was a hell of a hit. And I believe that makes him the first ever Norwegian to score for Arsenal.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think so.
Lovely.
Yeah.
Paul Ederson never got a goal.
No.
Very possibly. But I think, what was I going to say? If that goal was scored in a World Cup, everyone would be complaining about the ball. Do you know what I mean? It was one of those where he hits it so well and it just flies all over the place. I agree. Yeah. If Ospina's in goal, I'm probably hammering him for that. But I do think it moves. It's an unusual thing from the goalkeeper to be sort of facing his own net by the time the ball crosses the line. It was sort of like he was trying to perform a backward somersault or something.
Yeah, he was spinning around, all right. But yeah, brilliant goal. Really, really, really good goal and kind of what we needed because we didn't make the most of the opportunities that we had. We've talked about Odegaard's one, but there was a really good chance for Aubameyang, a Bellerin cross. And I have to give the goalkeeper a lot of credit. That was a really good save. It was almost a Socrates own goal, which would have been quite something, wouldn't it? It deflected off Socrates. The keeper made a very, very good save. Aubameyang had a free kick on target. Luiz, to be fair to him, got the free kick on target. But I think in doing so, he drained his own resources so badly that he ended up making that mistake towards the end of the first half. He concentrated hard on that. Yeah. Just everything else went.
Or he was just still thinking about it, you know, the highlight of his Arsenal free kick taking career to date, an effort on target. It was all he could think of, getting back to the dressing room and saying, you see, I can test the goalkeeper.
He didn't test he didn't test the goalkeeper.
But yeah, I agree. There were some decent opportunities. It was a fantastic save from that deflected Aubameyang header. I thought we started the half well, you know, and we played with a bit of urgency. I thought it was interesting to see both fullbacks playing very high and aggressively, which I don't think is always the case. You know, I feel like Tierney gets a lot more license to do that typically than Bellerin, but it felt like we were really going at them on both flanks.
Agree.
But yeah, obviously, you know, we tried to give them an equaliser just before half time, and then eventually managed to do it 10 minutes into the second half.
Yeah, I'm trying to think, is there anything from the second half that we're missing before?
I haven't got anything in my notes.
I mean, there was an early substitution.
Yes, that was interesting, wasn't it? I mean,
Partey off and Ceballos on, and Arteta said afterwards it was a tactical thing, you know, which managers say, so
I don't read too much into it.
I feel like it was a substitution. It was so early, it feels like it had to be sort of pre-planned. Do you know what I mean?
Didn't we do it against Burnley as well?
Well, I mean, he came off with about 12 minutes to go against Burnley. You're saving his legs a little bit there. But at 55 minutes, that kind of feels like pre-planned. And I don't think Partey had his best game by any stretch of the imagination, but he didn't look that happy coming off. And then, of course, you know, you put Ceballos on and within 2 minutes or 3 minutes, they get their goal. So
he doesn't have a great time in this stadium, Dani Ceballos, does he? He won't be joining Olympiakos anytime soon.
No, I don't think so. You know, so that was, you know, I was looking at it and I was thinking, okay, you're throwing on Ceballos for Partey. Okay, I kind of get it. Maybe, and more than likely, you've got the derby in mind for that. But then I was looking at what else was happening, and, you know, I thought Saka was quiet, and maybe we could have made a change a little bit before we did with regards to him. I was looking maybe for Pepe to come on for Saka again,
yeah,
with half an eye on
Saka, by the way.
Yeah, go on.
I just think in the last couple of games, you know, we've said, oh, he's been playing and playing and playing, and will it ever catch up with him? And I just wonder if in the last two games we have seen it slightly catch up with him.
I think so. And I think, you know, it'd be worth pointing out that he has taken over the last few weeks a hell of a kicking from various opponents. Like, he is being targeted time and time and time again with fouls. And I do wonder if that's perhaps a factor. You know, maybe he's carrying a few little aches or strains or little sore bits. And you know, there's one reaction to being fouled all the time is to get up and show them what you can do and produce something as a fuck you. But another one is, like, it could possibly get tiring and hurt you, and it has an impact on the way that you play. And would I be surprised? I wouldn't be hugely surprised if he didn't start the derby.
No, nor would I. Nor would I. Which seems crazy, I know.
I know, yeah,
part.
Yeah. I know. I mean, if everyone's fully fit, et cetera, et cetera. But just in the circumstances, I have a sneaky feeling that maybe he won't.
Well, it is a part of the pitch we do have options in, especially with Emile Smith Rowe coming back from injury. I mean, you talk about maybe wanting to see an earlier substitution in that area. In Smith Rowe and Nicola Pepe, you know, you've got a couple of quite exciting options to come on there.
Yeah.
So I also was a little bit surprised that didn't happen sooner.
Yeah. I mean, after we went behind then, having let in that goal, were you... I mean, again, it's another...
Went level, let's remember.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
It felt like we'd got
Yeah,
behind.
Sorry. It did, though. That's what those goals do to me.
it's weird, isn't it? Because, like, do you know what? 1-1 in an away leg, it wouldn't have been a catastrophic result, but the nature of it, it would have felt so horrendous.
Yeah, and like 2-1 is better than 1-0.
That was interesting. Martin Keown before the game was like, 1-0 was ideal for Arsenal. And I was like, well, no, 10-0 was ideal.
Yeah, yeah. 1-0 is not ideal, but 2-1 is a better win than 1-0, you know?
Yeah, any you know, amount of goals we score more than one. Is good.
Yeah, I mean, 2-0 is obviously better, and 3-0 is even better. If we could manage the nil,
but 2-1 is better than 1-0 as well. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, I see. I know. I agree with you. I agree with you. But I'm just wondering what you thought of that period of time between their goal and, I'm not going to say the goal came out of nothing from our perspective, but it was from a corner. So it wasn't like we were piling on the pressure, et cetera, et cetera. To me, it, you know, I saw the cameras cut at one point. That could have been a throw in or something like that. And I could see Elneny getting ready on the sideline. I was going, Elneny? Really? You know,
I drafted my tweet, Andrew. Yeah. I was all gearing up for another Mikel Arteta substitutions conversation at that point.
Well, I mean, I think it's still kind of a conversation because, you know, it was the 81st minute by the time we got those subs on, and we went ahead with a great header from Gabriel from the corner in front. I think it was a short corner, and then Willian crossed it, and it's a brilliant, brilliant header from Gabriel. Really,
thank God
powerful.
That didn't get ruled out. I was, you know.
I know, yeah, I mean, yeah, I would have been furious. But you know, the Elneny change when it came with Smith Rowe and Pepe, okay. I get it. And I think Elliot Yankee Gunner did a tweet which, came back to not bite him in the arse, but it was one of those.
Really?
Yeah. It was one of those who was like, I can't believe Arteta is putting on Elneny and we're just trying to hold up. And this is, you know, whatever it was. He was like not happy with the Elneny situation. And then, of course, he scores that goal and everyone's going, ha ha, delete your life, et cetera. You know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Because we all saw that coming, obviously.
Yeah. All the Elneny maniacs out there.
That's what Arteta brought him on for. I did like that he was like, you know, he's been working on that in training with Steve Rowley. And I was like, you can't bring on Elneny and be like, yeah, I thought what would happen is that he'd bang
Hang
it
on,
in.
Did he say
yards.
That?
Yeah, he said he's been practicing his long-range shooting with Steve Rowley. Steve Round, sorry, yeah. Who's Steve Rowley?
He was the former chief scout, yeah.
Yeah, we've got to credit Steve Round, I guess, for yesterday's result. But, yeah, it was fascinating because I forgot we could make that many subs. I don't know about you, but
I knew we could make five. I was waiting.
Well, me, the professional journalist, had forgotten. And it does make a big difference. And actually, in that last 10 minutes, we could have scored more. I mean, we looked fresh and we looked like we knew they were there for the taking. Mm. Now, had we done that 10 minutes earlier, who knows? Mm. Maybe we would be even more comfortable. I agree, those changes could have come sooner.
They could have come sooner, but I suppose in the way that it played out,
you can't
argue too much because, okay, we went ahead. The Gabriel goal is fucking brilliant. I love that header. And then Elneny does what Elneny does sometimes in Europe. All of his goals have been absolute belters. I remember being in the Camp Nou for the goal against Barcelona.
His first Arsenal goal.
Yeah, his first Arsenal goal. It was brilliant, but it was pissing rain that night. It was the most miserable fucking game of football ever. But there you go. Good times were
had. By the way,
a quick thing on
the Gabriel header, I just think it's probably worthy of a bit more comment. There's quite a funny thing. If you watch, as Willian sort of loops the cross in, I'm not convinced that maybe he is looking for Gabriel, but basically Aubameyang starts peeling away towards the back post, which is like a really classic spot for him. You know, he's made a few volleys from that position.
I'm looking at
it. And it's quite funny. He's jogging backwards as if like, yeah, I'm just going to get on this. And then from nowhere, Gabriel like launches into picture and Aubameyang just sort of keeps jogging backwards. Like, don't mind me. I was never going to get it. It's just a sort of nice little detail, but it's an unbelievable header. It really is.
I'm just going to watch it here again. Yeah,
he just moves towards it, Aubameyang, and then Gabriel absolutely storms in and takes it, and it's a sensational header.
Oh, it really is fucking good. Yeah, I love a good top corner header like that.
He's not scored a headed goal like that, I wouldn't think, since... I can't remember one, certainly since the days of Giroud. It is a brilliant, brilliant goal.
He did score a header against Wolves, didn't he, Gabriel?
It wasn't too bad. Yeah, was that?
Well, not quite as emphatic, I don't think.
A Willian cross.
Yeah,
well.
It was from a Willian cross.
I mean,
the assist king, Willian.
The assist king. I think I saw this morning. He's got more assists than any Arsenal player this season. 7.
It is mad, isn't it?
Yeah, it does feel weird that we should counter it by saying he's also scored no goals. Do you know what I mean? Like,
I think for
balance. Like, listen, he's doing better. And
no question.
That's good.
No
that's
question.
Good to see. And he can deliver a cross. He's always been able to deliver a cross.
Mm.
But
you know that. Look, without going into the nuts and bolts of it, he is doing better. I'm quite happy to give him credit for that. But that goal is mostly Gabriel. You know, his desire, his timing, his work rate, the technical quality he has to put that header exactly where it needs to go. You know, it's kind of all on him. It is, you know, I don't want people are going to give out to me for this by saying it's not really a Willian assist. It is a Willian assist, but I think most of the credit has to go to the goal scorer. Similarly with Aubameyang at the weekend, Willian is credited with an assist for the goal against Burnley, but, you know, it's a simple pass to his left, and then the striker goes on and does pretty much all the work, you know? So it's one of those things where, look, statistically, he's top of the charts, and good luck to him for that, but... I just find it's one of those things where, you know, I like using stats, and I think stats are very, very useful, to round out your picture of something or your understanding of something. But it's also, I think this is one of those where the stats are better than what your eyes are telling you, you know, that way.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I do think inevitably... I wonder if we'd caveat it so much if it was a player that we liked more. Do you know what I mean?
I agree. I completely agree.
Like,
I'm not
saying with Mesut Ozil, for example. I don't remember when he was racking up like 15 assists, people being like, yeah, but how many were actually assists? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but it's kind of similar to the Ozil thing in that, you know, when he... we could all see that he was not the player he was. For quite some time, right?
Yeah.
But there were still all these stats about how he created the most chances. But we could see that the player was fading badly. You know, so there is this eyes versus stats thing going on. I absolutely take your point about Willian. If it was a player we like more, you know, maybe we wouldn't have this discussion. But, you know, the reality is he was stinking the place out for half the season. Mm-hmm. And so it becomes a talking point. I'm glad he's doing better. It's good for the team that he's doing better. Keep it up. All the rest. But there you go. Anyway, enough time spent on that.
So what you're saying is you love Willian.
I'm just going to wind forward here. And yeah. can we talk about the...
That's the end of part one.
I just want to talk about the... Is it Granit Xhaka who gets the assist for Mohamed Elneny's goal?
Yeah, I don't know. Let's have a look. I haven't checked that one out.
Let's have a look.
Xhaka. Do you know what?
It's Gabriel.
It's Gabriel.
Gabriel.
Wow.
Goal
what
and
a game
assist.
He had.
I mean, look, he's
goal
set it
and
up
assist.
For, brilliant.
Should we play him up front?
He put it on a plate for Elneny, didn't he? Absolutely. Just laid it. Tap in the end for Elneny.
Who set up Odegaard? That's what we need to know. I mean, the vision they
Partey.
Showed.
I think it was Thomas Partey played a pass to Odegaard for that. So
There you go.
So
all in all, a good night's work.
A really good result.
Mostly.
Yeah. A really good result. A really good win, really good goals. It's a great lead to take into the second leg. It's a good confidence boost, if you like, assuming we can focus on the positives, going into a North London derby to go away from home and to win, you know, score three goals, create lots of chances. It is really good. It is good. And I just wonder what the conversation is going to be on the training ground this week because, you know, like we said earlier, Arteta did not look like a happy man afterwards.
No. And that will be interesting. Mm. I'm trying to think what we did against Spurs in the away game.
Lost.
Well, we lost and had all the ball, basically.
I think we might have a question about the Spurs game and what have you in part two. Yeah. So will we?
Because it's a big, big game. I mean, you know, it's...
It sure is. Yeah. Okay, let's take a little break. We've come to the end of part one. We'll come back with your questions and more in part two right after this.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog. Welcome back to the Arscast Extra. This is part two of the show where we answer the questions that you send to us on Twitter at Gunnarblog and at Arsblog, and also on the Arsblog Discord chat server, which you get access to if you are an Arsblog member on Patreon. Before I let you ask the first question, James, I did like this from Gimpo, who's at Mr. Gimpson on Twitter, and he said, should a golden dunce's hat be established alongside the golden boots so at least we can win one thing this year?
Yeah, we'd be the front runners for sure.
Yeah, every year.
I think maybe it should just be like a golden David Luiz wig, you know, that the player has to wear for the following year. And unless it's David Luiz, in which case he just sprays his hair gold.
Yeah, don't a lot of football clubs do that? Like if you make the mistake in training, you have to wear the orange bib or something like that. Making them wear the Luiz wig.
Do you remember there was the thing about the Wheel of Fortune at Arsenal? Mikel Arteta's Wheel of Fortune. And if a player got something wrong or was late, they had to spin the wheel. And there were various punishments, like clean the captain's car.
Hang on. Have I woken up in a different universe? What the fuck is this? Seriously?
This is real. As reported by the Athletic UK.
Mikel Arteta, Wheel of Fortune. I'm Googling this. Mikel Arteta has created a Wheel of Fortune. How has this passed me by?
We should have played this as like a game show. You know, we should have played Mikel Arteta's Wheel of Fortune. That's how he makes his substitutes, I understand.
Wow. I mean, I get like... No, I don't get it.
It was like a morale thing, you know. When he first came in. I think it probably... I imagine it might have come from Steve Round, just because I know that he's quite big on the cultural stuff. But it was
cultural stuff.
Yeah.
I love that this is culture. This is the Wheel of Fortune. I mean, what other game shows are we going to introduce?
I don't mean cultural, like taking them to a museum.
I know. But like, I know the culture inside the club. I get it. But I'm just...
They also do like Mr. and Mrs. No, I don't know. But they...
Countdown...
Anyway, what I heard, the reason I talk about this, is that a lot of the kinds of things they were doing as like forfeits are no longer possible in a kind of COVID lockdown environment. So maybe some sort of dunce hat could be introduced, but I guess it would have to be heavily... cleaned between wearings.
You just have to have disposable dunce's hat. Maybe we could get a job lot, you know, save ourselves some money, buy in
That's
bulk,
true.
Just get like loads of them.
Yeah. Yeah. And then just dump it all in the ocean for the whales to
For
drink.
Sure. For sure. Anyway, we better get on to
What was the question?
I can't remember. That was it. It was about the golden dunce's hat. I was going to let you ask the first question, but I could ask one if you want.
No, I've got one. It's a very simple one, actually. It's from Blade, the vampire, on the Discord. And Blade asks, whose goal was best? All were great goals, but who really made you get up off the sofa?
Gabriel for me. Like, you know, as a center half who loved a good header every now and again, I know how difficult that goal is. Like the Elneny goal, the Odegaard goal, taking nothing away from the execution, but kicking a ball really hard at the goal is something most players can do. Not always with those results, of course. But I think the way Gabriel just appeared, you know, flying through the air and then heading it back across into the top corner, just brilliant. Brilliant. I mean, that was... I loved the Odegaard goal, but that one was the one for me. What about you?
So I think Gabriel's goal was the best, but
That's what he said. Which one is the best?
I know, but in terms of like which one spoke to me most, I would choose Odegaard. Just because I'm a lefty,
left-footer,
I think.
Left-footers, yeah.
And I just got a soft spot for a left-footer. And I was thinking, actually, can you remember a first Arsenal goal that's better than that?
There must be loads, actually. I'm not saying the loads of goals that are better than that.
Henry against Southampton was a very good goal.
Bergkamp against Southampton was a really good goal as well.
That was his second, though, wasn't it? On the day,
I can't remember.
The one that he smashed in off the post.
Yeah.
That you sort of can't quite see how it goes in from the normal angle. I think that was his second. I don't know. Maybe there are loads, but I couldn't think of many.
Thomas Vermaelen, did he not, like, score a ridiculous long-range effort for
30 goals that season, actually.
Yeah.
He won the Golden Boot. as far as I recall. They were all great goals. They were all great goals.
Okay. Tom, who's at Tom Stebs on Twitter, says, that's 9 in a row without a clean sheet. How many of the goals in that time came from our own stupidity as opposed to actual quality play from the opposition? I think you could make a case of probably all of them to some extent.
We could probably
or
look that up, couldn't we? I
saw a stat which said, I have it here. It comes from, it doesn't come from him, but Suhail Parmar, who's at S Parmar 1105, says, goodly morning, I guess. It is a goodly morning, we won. He said, did you see the stat of 7 of 14 goals Arsenal conceded this year, I assume 2021, are due to individual errors? So that's 50% of all the goals we've let in are down to individual errors.
Do you know what's weird? Before that, we had a run of 5 clean sheets from 6 games.
And we were thinking, maybe we're onto something
here. We're onto something, yeah.
But maybe that's the aberration.
Maybe it's all because they took the Wheel of Fortune away.
Could be.
Players are protesting and saying, bring me the Wheel of Fortune, presented by John Leslie.
I want to clean a toilet with a toothbrush. I can't play properly. I can't defend properly.
How can you expect us to perform if we don't have the threat dangling over us of scrubbing a toilet basin with our toothbrushes? I don't know.
Either.
I mean, all the goals. I mean, look, I'm having a look now. Wolverhampton Wanderers. We know what happened there. We gave the penalty.
And it was a bit
Jan Moutinho. That wasn't our fault, I think.
We could have closed him down, though. Could have closed him down a bit.
Listen.
But that's not an individual error.
There's an error in any goal.
Yeah, yeah.
But that one, I think, fair enough. Aston Villa, we gave them that one.
Yeah.
So that's 2 out of 3. Leeds United, they scored twice.
Trying to remember the goals. One of them was a good goal.
Yeah, I think they were reasonable goals. Header from Struick and then Helder Costa. I think they were fairly reasonable, as I recall. So, okay, 2 from 5 were our fault. Benfica, we gave a penalty away, so that was very much our fault.
Well, that was the Smith Rowe one. I think that was really harsh. I don't know that you could call that an individual error.
Oh, yeah, okay.
The Ceballos one.
Yeah, that's the second leg.
Yeah.
That's the second leg. I mean, plenty of them, at least half, have been our fault.
Too many.
We are scoring more goals. That's what I would say. You know, if we got 3 last night, 3 at Leicester, 3 against Benfica in the second leg, 4 against Leeds United, we are being a bit more productive, at least. In the other end of the pitch.
Well, yeah, I mean, if this was November,
18
December.
18 shots yesterday.
18.
Yeah.
That's good.
It is good.
It's good. I mean, there are things that are positive about what's happening. And, you know, again, it's really difficult to convince people that you're on the right track and that, what did he say, that this project is going to go bang. Oh, you know, it's really difficult to convince them.
I think I saw a tweet from Ian Stone that said that really could come back to haunt you as a phrase. Do you know what I mean? Like, if things go wrong, you could just see all the introductions to pieces being like, Mikel Arteta famously said that one day this project would go bang. He did not imagine it would implode like this.
Yeah.
I hope not, obviously.
Yeah, sure. Do implosions bang? I mean, explosions, bang, but do implosions not kind of go...
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. What noise does a black hole make? We're not sure.
I think
that, imagine if the scientists were listening and that's what they get. They'd be absolutely furious.
That'd be fucking terrible. Think about all the science we're going to learn.
Well, also, because once you're stuck in one, I don't think you can get out.
Do you not end up? Do you not end up the other side?
Back in time. Oh, Planet of the Apes, isn't it?
Yeah, or fucking Interstellar. Was that not a black hole? That fucking movie. Jesus Christ.
Well, the movie's a black hole. Yeah.
Fucking hell. 3 hours of watching a guy travel through space and time and he ends up behind his own fucking bookcase. Fuck off. Anyway.
If Phil Collins wrote a film, it would be that. I've got a question that I think is good.
Good.
It's not by me. I think it's interesting. Hogwash323 on Twitter. Have we forgotten what good actually is? And he then clarifies. There seems to be a belief that every time we dominate, we should score 2 or 3 goals and we should not have lulls in the game. Even the best teams waste dominance and drop their performance level at times.
I mean, I think sometimes there is an expectation that, how do I put this? Like, everything is so analyzed these days that you can lose sight of the good things that you do in a game. But I think it is a consequence of us doing the things that we do to ourselves. Mm-hmm. You know, that we get so frustrated when we don't make the most of dominance because we know that the gun is out. It's cocked and loaded. Locked and loaded? Mm. Cocked and loaded. Do you cock a gun? Cock a pistol anyway, don't you? And it's pointed right at our foot. So we know that if we don't do something good in the moments when we're good, it could very well come back to bite us in the arse and also blow our toes off. So I think we're slightly conditioned or traumatized by what they've done to us in some ways. But I also think that's a fair point, that you cannot realistically dominate a game for 90 minutes. The best Arsenal teams didn't really do that. What they could do was dominate, obliterate, and then control. You know what I mean?
Well,
you think about the Invincibles when they go, I'm thinking about a game against maybe Middlesbrough, and they go and score like 4 goals in the first 20 minutes and then just play. Just control the game, have no worries whatsoever. But also, there were games when the Invincibles won or drew by very, very, very tight margins. Really tight margins. Single goal wins. Scraping a draw in a couple of games, to keep that unbeaten record. So I think there is perhaps an idea that when we were good, we were only good. And I don't think that's realistic either. So to answer the question, maybe?
Yeah, I think it's interesting because we're so focused on Arsenal that I think to an extent we analyse their games almost in a vacuum. Mm. We don't think about the fact that almost nobody has completely competent, controlled performances. Maybe this season Manchester City are dominating games sometimes, kind of start to finish. But, we do sometimes get, as a fan base, exercised about the 7 minutes at the end of the half where we lost our way. And it's that is going to happen. That's football. But I think the point you make about the Invincibles is a really salient one, which is you don't have to dominate if you're in front.
Mm.
And actually, if you're in front, sometimes it doesn't make sense to dominate. Sometimes you can take your foot off the gas and look to hit someone on the break.
Yeah.
Sort of game state is almost everything. And I think if I could have anything for this Arsenal team, if I could kind of give them any superpower, it would be take the lead in games. Take the lead, because then you're in control.
Well, we took the lead last night. And we were in control. And we took the lead against Burnley, and we were in control. So maybe the thing you might want to give them is to consolidate. Take the lead, then consolidate the lead, and then if you make a mistake, it's not quite as fatal.
Yeah, yeah. It is interesting because I sort of think it also depends what your expectations are. Like, you can analyse this Arsenal team and compare them to the Invincibles and say, that's the level we want to get to, and therefore that's kind of how we should, the prism we should see them through and what we should demand. Mm. But you have to offset that with how unrealistic that is at this point in time.
Sure.
So, yeah, it's an interesting one. I think it's natural. As fans, we want our team to be good from the first minute to the 90th and to take every chance and not give it away any, of course. But it's just not feasible. What is feasible, presumably, is not passing the ball to our opponents in our own penalty box.
Yeah. I mean, that seems like a relatively simple thing to sort out.
I think I should change what I said and say, just make it, can that be our thing that we don't do? Rather than taking the lead. Forget taking the lead. Let's just not give the ball to the opponents 10 yards out from goal.
I mean, I feel like they could do that potentially. You know, there's a way of that happening.
I don't know, Andrew. I don't know if you've watched our games.
I have, and I'm traumatized by them. Let me ask you this one then.
Yes.
From, well, I can't pronounce the, it's in brackets Gooner, but I can't pronounce the first bit. But he's at the underscore Arsenal or Arsenal 01. And he says there was a lot of talk about Pepe being rested against Burnley for this game. Yet again, he was on the bench. Is he not in Arteta's plans? Should the club sell him in the summer? And I think that's what we said on Monday. You certainly said you were hoping that the reason
he wasn't
in the team against Burnley was because he was going to be unleashed against Olympiacos, and he got 9 minutes at the end. So there was another question on the Discord from... I've got to make the font bigger. Amir Mim 11. And he was asking a similar kind of question, but based around Arteta's preference of Willian over Pepe and whether this was, you know, to do with prioritizing a signing that he was more involved in, et cetera, et cetera. So I don't necessarily want to make it a Willian discussion or a Willian versus Pepe discussion, but if you want to use that to talk about it, feel free. But I mean, what do you make of the Pepe thing? Is he being rested for the North London Derby? Is that why?
What we need to know is how many of Pepe's assists were actually assists. That's the only way we can settle this. I think I was surprised, actually, that Pepe didn't play.
But were you? I mean, that's the thing, isn't it?
I was a little bit. I thought he was probably our best player against Burnley, despite missing two chances. I thought he was our most dangerous player. I think there is a kind of tactical justification, which is that, you know, the way that the team played in the 4-2 win over Leeds, where Arteta kind of changed everything up. I think he does like, and he did it against Benfica, he does like the idea of Aubameyang up top and then three players behind who are kind of midfielders. You'd call them midfielders rather than forwards. You know, whether it's Smith Rowe, Odegaard, Saka, Willian. And I think he does class Pepe almost as a forward. You know, when we've seen him play on that left-hand side, he's basically been playing it the way Aubameyang plays it, you know, drifting into central spots, getting in the box. Personally, I like that. I like having a second goal scorer on the pitch and someone else who takes up really good positions and is a natural finisher. That appeals to me. But I think Arteta, for whatever reason, seems to like something about this chemistry. And he sees Willian as more interchangeable with the likes of Smith Rowe than he does Pepe. Mm. Now, in answer to the question, I don't think Pepe should be sold, actually. I sort of think there's been enough progress with him that I think we should be leaning into that and trying to turn him into the player he might be. I can't get away from the fact that I do think there is a fundamental kind of lack of conviction from the manager in the player.
Is it Yeah, I mean, is it a lack of conviction or is it an incompatibility between the player and the way?
Well, or is it conviction? Yeah. Does he know exactly what he thinks? I mean, it's a difficult one to unpick, and I actually don't know the answer to this, but because everything he says all the right things, Ri Pepe, you know? But actions do speak louder than words, and I thought he would play last night.
Mm.
I really, really did. What do you make of it all?
I sort of think he thinks Pepe doesn't quite fit into what he wants. And like you say, in recent weeks, we have been scoring more goals. Like, I'm never going to advocate for Willian. Just not a player that I enjoy watching in an Arsenal shirt. It will never be. I can acknowledge his recent improvement in form, but he's just never going to be a player that I particularly enjoy. I would prefer to see Nicolas Pepe in the team than Willian. But I guess if what the manager wants and what I want, obviously, and what other people want are very different things. And if he feels like Willian is the better fit for his system, I don't know quite where that leaves Pepe beyond being a £72 million super sub.
Well, I think I was watching Man City the other day and I was thinking about how they have players who are sort of very clearly schooled on structure and, you know, intricate team play. But I kind of think every team requires a joker in the pack. And I think for them, it's Riyad Mahrez. I think he is kind of an individualist in a team setup. And he's a sensational player, by the way, talent-wise. He scored a couple of goals the other night. I don't think many in that City squad... I mean, they've got a lot of good players, but he as an individual sort of skill player, he is sensational. And I do feel that Pepe is the equivalent at Arsenal. And it means, unfortunately, that he'll kind of always have, maybe under Arteta, a slightly restricted, limited role, that he'll be deployed in certain games or certain scenarios.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure he's ever going to be the go-to guy.
I mean, is that not in some ways counterproductive? Because what you're asking from that player is to produce without being given the kind of leeway and playing time that other players get. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I don't want to say unfair, but it's a lot to ask of a player to, okay, we need you to do something now. Come on for 20 minutes and do it.
Well, yeah, and it's not like he's been, you know, rotated out for Bernardo Silva or Phil Foden, is it? You know, you know, he's not playing in as good a team as that. And I think Pepe as well is the kind of player who, when he's good, he's a fan favourite player, isn't he? Because he's skillful, he's exciting, he makes things happen. We want to see him. And, you know, I can think of Arsenal managers previously who I think would have absolutely... relished having a talent like that at their disposal, particularly Arsene Wenger. But yeah, I'm just not sure Arteta is of that mind.
Mm.
But it doesn't lead me to say, you know, a few months ago, I really thought the writing was on the wall for Pepe at Arsenal. I thought he was absolutely done. I think we've seen enough sort of use of him by Arteta and enough signs from Pepe of him really getting and understanding the system. I mean, yesterday, even in the 8 minutes on the field, I thought he was very, very good. And there was one instance where he was frustrated. He hadn't got a pass, maybe from Lacazette. But about 30 seconds later, he absolutely haired back and won the ball off one of their defenders. And I thought, yeah, I mean, that's what he's added to his game that he just wasn't really doing to the same extent last season. It feels like he's doing everything that could be asked of him.
Yeah. I think that's very fair. Like all the things, maybe the concerns that you know, managers had about him and his defensive work and everything else, I think he is doing pretty much everything that could be asked of him. I know he missed that chance against Burnley. Stick that in the net and it's a different story, you know. But,
Does he play at Spurs? I mean, that was one of the questions. Does he play at Spurs? Do you expect him to?
I think
you can't expect him to ever, I don't think, because you never know. Do you know what I mean?
That's exactly it. But I mean, I think
I've learned my lesson.
My sneaky feeling about, you know, Saka and Spurs would be a start for Pepe against Spurs.
Like for like, almost on the right hand side.
Yeah, you know, and then you have Saka as something to bring on if you need to, you know. So yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be averse to him starting that particular game. I mean, Mark Morrow, seeing as we're on the subject, Mark Morrow, who's at Monty Mark, says, how do you think we should approach the North London derby? They'll want us to press them high up the pitch and hope that this will play into their hands. Should that be the strategy, or should we try something different? We know Mourinho's side like to counterattack. I mean, could it possibly be that they'll look at us and think that actually, if we press them a bit, we could force them into the kind of mistakes that, you know, their good players could capitalize on. I mean, might our defensive instability in some way make them a little more expansive, thus making the game a bit more open than it usually is?
Maybe. I mean, Spurs have found something, haven't they, going forward? Well, they've found Gareth Bale.
And they already had Kane and Son as well, so, you know.
Yeah. And, you know, Kane and Son had sort of run dry a little bit, but the introduction of Bale has kind of breathed new life into all three of those players. So they look dangerous. They will be really dangerous, particularly on the counter-attack. I'll be fascinated to see how we tackle Kane. You know, I felt, if you remember the way they scored their
hopefully
goals,
at knee height with our studs.
Yeah, that would be nice. I was going to ask you, you know, what if Willian, like, took out Harry Kane at the weekend?
Hero. Right. Statue. Yeah.
Name on the back of the shirt.
Steady on.
I feel like we didn't sort of get close enough to him, and we let Spurs play off him way too much. And I'm really interested to see who Arteta gives that job to at centre-half.
That's a really interesting one, because Gabriel, I thought, had a very good game last night. I thought he had a really good game. You know, aside from the goal, I thought he played well. It was interesting to watch during the Man City game, after we had not weathered, because obviously we went behind in the second fucking minute or whatever it was, but once we'd come to terms with what City were doing, we pushed Pablo Mari into really high positions, some quite strange positions too.
Yeah.
During that game. And I wonder if he might be viewed as the kind of player who could get tight to Harry Kane when he drops off into midfield. Because someone's got to deal with him. Someone's got to deal with him.
And I think it will be Pablo Mari. I mean, famous last words, I'll probably be wrong. But I think it will be. And I think, in theory, he's maybe the most suited to go and do that. I think he's been very good, actually. It's an interesting thing at centre-half. We've got options there, and there's not a huge amount between them, I don't think.
It's a shame that Marie and Gabriel are both left-footed, in a way.
You think they're the best two, yeah.
Well, I mean, look, I try as I might, I cannot watch David Luiz without fear. Like, it's just not possible.
You're only human.
Yeah, exactly, after all. So, you know, it's really difficult not to worry about Luiz. And I don't quite get the same sense of panic when I watch Pablo Mari and when I watch Gabriel. And maybe that's because they haven't played that much. But also, it's because they haven't made the same amount of mistakes and calamitous errors at the back that David Luiz has in the 18 months that he has been an Arsenal player. You know, there's a reason why my heart is in my mouth when Luiz plays. And, you know, somebody made a really good description of him. I apologize, I can't remember. I saw it on Twitter last night, and I can't remember who it was, but the essence of it was that David Luiz is he's a footballer who plays at the back rather than a defender. Do you know what I mean? I think that's
absolutely right.
Really, really perfect description of Louise. Whereas I think Marie and Gabrielle are defenders first. You know, Holding is a defender first. What Louise can give you on the ball in terms of possession and all of that kind of stuff, maybe the others can't quite do that. But I think in part that explains why, you know, he has, you know, his defensive instincts aren't the first thing for David Luiz. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's interesting. He can have, as we've seen, he can have a great game at the back sometimes in certain scenarios. But I guess because he is so gifted technically and talented, he's probably got away with more in the course of his career than certain other centre-halves. You know, he probably hasn't had to maybe focus quite as hard on some aspects of the game, or maybe they just don't come as naturally to him.
I think as well, that's a good point. I think when you're younger, you can get away with more because you can recover better in games than when you're 33, 34.
Yeah, that's true. And we have seen the mistakes in terms of errors and sending off, you know, stats-wise, they've definitely escalated in the last few years. That could just be the influence of Arsenal on a player. I mean, Simon Collins made a point, actually. It wasn't a question, but it was just in a sort of discussion we were having on Twitter last night, where he said it's quite weird how Holding's gone from playing every minute to not featuring. It is quite curious, isn't it? It's happened quite fast.
Yeah, I mean, he had those... he had that... I think, you know, we're talking about the goals that we concede as mistakes. And look, the mistake that people point to for the Villa goal was Cedric leaving a pass short, but also Holding was a mistake.
Yeah.
You know what he did there? And was it Holding for the Man City goal as well? I think was culpable.
When you let
Raheem Sterling rise above you to head home in the penalty box as a central defender, you're not doing your job right.
Well, he had time to get out his stepladder, didn't he?
Yeah, he did, all right. You know, so it is one of those weird things because, you know, he played a lot of games, gets a new contract, and now he's not playing at all. You know, maybe he'll play against Spurs. I don't know. How much can you keep asking of Luiz? You know, he does have those 33-year-old legs. But at the moment, it seems that he's the preferred choice on the right hand side of the defence.
But I think it will be Marie against Spurs. In terms of other things about how we approach it, it's just tricky, isn't it? I mean, you know, Jose Mourinho teams historically are problematic for Arsenal.
Yes. Are we overdue a win against a Mourinho team?
I think we are. I quite fancy Arsenal, actually, I have to say. Maybe it's just the sort of elation of last night's result.
And the drugs.
Clouding my judgment.
And all the drugs you're on right now.
And all the many, many drugs that I'm not on.
You're not on because you...
According to my CBC contract.
Yes, of course. Of course.
How do you feel at this early stage? I know you'll probably be doing a preview. Are you doing a preview pod?
I think we'll do a preview pod. I have to talk to Lewis about when exactly we're going to do it. We might do it later or we might do it tomorrow. We'll see what the story is. Just let a little bit of dust settle on this one.
Can you give me a preview of the preview pod? How are you feeling?
I am not feeling as confident as you are simply because I cannot shake the idea that however good... they are up top, and they are, and we know they've got players who score a lot of goals. And however problematic Mourinho teams have been to us down the years, I've just got so much fear about what we're going to do to ourselves. I really do. I mean, I know we won last night. I know we're scoring more goals. If we can score some goals against Spurs, brilliant. But I want to be... wrong, you know. I want to talk to you on Monday morning and for it to be a very goodly morning indeed, with some kind of special jingle that I would have to make if that were to come to pass, right?
Yeah.
I want that for me, for you, for all of us listening to this. But I can't see how it's going to happen. That's all.
We shall see.
We shall see.
Derby day is always a scary one.
It is, and that's part of it as well. That is part of it as well.
What about this question?
Go on. Oh. Go ahead.
Well, this question comes from John Stones, not the Manchester City centre-half. which is a shame, at Stonesy10 on Twitter. It's quite general, but they just ask, what are your thoughts on Tomás so far? He seems to show glimpses of talent, but in the last two games has been targeted for the press and has looked quite lethargic and lacking urgency.
Like, I don't think he's fully fit yet, for sure. He has been a bit more, I won't say careless in possession, but there were a few times last night he gave it away, and he did as well against Burnley. Look, I think in terms of talent, he's our best midfield player. It's hard to get to your best level when you're in and out of a team, you know, and you're trying to adjust to the Premier League, a new country, and all of that kind of stuff. So I'm not particularly worried. Like I said earlier, I think the early substitution it might have been tactical in the sense that Arteta wanted to get minutes into his legs, wanted to ensure that he was perhaps more fit for Tottenham, you know?
Well, it was the Spurs game, of course, that he went down in, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. Went down
and
got pushed back on.
Midfield, you know, with Højbjerg and Ndombele, if he plays, Sissoko. They're a very physical side. And we could do with Thomas Partey, I think, in that match. How do you feel about the signing kind of more generally? I mean, you know, some of the concerns when it happened were surrounding his age and, you know, the size of the fee.
Well, it was to do with resale value more than his age. He's in his prime as a player, you know. I
suppose what I mean is if you've got, you know, 3 years or 4 years of prime Thomas Partey, the first year's not been hugely productive, has it?
No. But would you rather have him than not, given our midfield options?
I definitely would. And I think I agree with you, he's our best midfield player. I just think in recent weeks, I guess maybe probably because of the injuries and his absence, I've kind of pondered, you know, had we gone for like the more creative attacking midfielder option, if we could have found one in the summer, how might that have impacted our season differently, given that it took until Christmas for us to kind of Smith Rowe with those reins.
Yeah. No,
it's an interesting one.
It is an interesting one. But look, you know, hopefully between now and the end of the season, he can stay fit and get himself up to his best level. And hopefully he can start to show a bit of that on Sunday in the derby. Would be very
timely. And just on his sort of passing and stuff, I personally don't think he's ever going to be like he passed at 93% guy, because I think he takes more risks on the ball than some of our other midfield players. Mm-hmm. And that incurs a bit of, you know, jeopardy and means he might lose it. And I just don't think as well that he's just not quite that sort of footballer, you know. I think he's not the metronomic kind of influence. I think he's more someone who's looking to make things happen. And last night I actually thought he was almost... There were points where I could see he was really pushing to make things happen. Like, he took a couple of shots on that maybe he didn't need to, but I just felt there was a kind of a desperation to impact the game, you know, which is positive.
We were having a little joke, a little WhatsApp group I'm in with some friends. And before the game kicked off, I don't know if you noticed this or would have taken note of it, but behind the goal, there was a great big net. You know, as there is often for European away fixtures, you watch the game through a net because, you know, you might throw something on the pitch, of course. And one of the lads said, yeah, well, you know, it's a good job that net is there for, you know, catching Thomas Partey shots. And, and after about 10 minutes, he had a shot which just went about 10 miles over the bar. So it is an area of his game he could work on. Maybe he needs to do some sessions with Steve Round. And Big Mo cracking shots at Runerson from 35 yards just to give them, you know, that extra bit of confidence as each one goes in. Yeah. Let me just ask you this one before we go. It's from Daniel Foreman, who's at Danny Foreman on Twitter. He says, why is rotational fouling so tolerated in football? In rugby, deliberate foul play is a straight sin bin or a red, but football just seems to accept it's part of the game, even though it's so fundamentally anti-football. Maybe a yellow eventually just incentivizes it.
Good question. It's a problem we're encountering quite a lot, especially Bukayo Saka. I think it might be a product of the transition football has made from being quite a high contact sport to a lower one. And so the sort of the laws of the game are kind of set up for you to be able to play it quite physically, but it's sort of not anymore. And a lot of these fouls kind of fall in the gap between those two things.
That's a really, that makes a lot of sense. I'd never thought of that. And that's a really excellent point.
Yeah. I think that might be it. But it is something that needs to be addressed because the modern game is, you know, not especially high intensity of contact.
I mean, there is a talent almost now, isn't there, in buying fouls, in winning fouls. Gabriel did it last night. Granit Xhaka does it commendably well, where he sort of gets his body between the ball and the player and invites contact, goes down and wins a free kick, which eases the pressure and lets you reset. That kind of thing is a tactical thing in a way.
There's going to be a stat line for it in Football Manager soon, surely, you know, like the cynicism 20. But like, yeah, it is part of the game. And it's interesting. I feel like there are still kind of loopholes that are being exploited. I mean, the obvious one that came in a few years ago was the tactical fouls high up the field, you know, to stop counterattacks. And there was a time where you could get away with that pretty straightforwardly and go unpunished. Now, a lot of the time, it is clamped down on with a booking. But the rotational foul is sort of a more recent loophole that still needs to
be. I mean, I think we're looking at it, you know, we could talk about Saka in this one because it's happened a lot in the last few weeks. And it's worrying because sooner or later, one of those tackles is going to be just mistimed enough to cause him a serious injury. And it'll be a fucking crying shame if and when that happens. So I think there is, you know, there needs to be an awareness of when a player is being targeted. And Saka was targeted last night. You could see it. There was a period of about 15 minutes where he was subjected to a number of fouls. And I think that's probably something that needs to be discussed, you know, at officiating level, refereeing level, where if they can identify that kind of thing is going on, where they're, you know, trying to kick a player out of the game. I mean, I'm sure people will say it's been happening to the best players for since time immemorial, right? Yeah, the good players get kicked. That is the reality. But it's also something that needs to be addressed. And I do wonder if something like a sin bin option might be a way of addressing that. Like the fouls themselves, they might be small, they might be insignificant, they might be cynical, but they're not necessarily yellow or red card fouls. But after two or three on one particular player, the next one, regardless of the severity of the foul, is going to spend 10 minutes in the sin bin, you know?
Yeah. It's interesting because the best players do get fouled a lot. But sometimes those fouls are just because the player's too good. You know, they take the ball away from the defender at the last minute. You know, and that was Jack Wilshere's problem, I think, actually, that he was a very, very good dribbler and a very brave dribbler. And it meant that he ended up in scenarios where he moved the ball and his legs were what went instead.
Yeah.
With Saka, it feels a bit more cynical than that. It's not so much a case of mistimed challenges. It's a case of, you know, can we foul the guy to dampen his impact on the match? And yeah, a sin bin is an interesting idea. How would you actually apply it? Would it be just, you know, would it be like four rotational fouling? So if a player is fouled X number of, I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, there's probably a lot more thought needs to go into this.
Than just you and me on a podcast.
Fundamental change to the laws of the game might require. Although, given you know what they've done with the handball rule,
I think we could have done a better job at that.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. I wonder what would be sin bin offences. I think there's probably something to be said as well for. Let me think of an example. Okay. Gabriel against Southampton, right?
Yeah.
Where he got a red card, and I think it was really harsh. The first yellow, I think. I can't remember exactly, but I think it was a yellow card. And I remember saying at the time that I was a bit worried about him, you know, his next foul. But this sort of foul that he made on Theo Walcott, I mean, it's barely a yellow card, and it's certainly not sufficient to reduce a team to 10 men for the rest of the game. Like, it's, you know, yellow and red card should be to stop serious foul play and that kind of stuff, you know, for the most part. So maybe in that scenario, Gabriel doesn't get a yellow card. He gets an orange card and goes and spends 10 minutes in a sin bin. You know, something, even something like the David Luiz one against Wolves.
Yeah.
You know, that was, okay, if it's a penalty, I'm not going to relitigate the whole thing, but if you consider that a penalty, I mean, does a team really deserve to go down to 10 men for that? You know, if he chopped him down, by all means. But that kind of thing, you know, there are incidents to which I think the sin bin rule could fairly easily be applied. And now we've got it worked out. Perfect.
Okay, great. Well, call Arsene at FIFA, let him know.
Yeah,
we'll do. Get that in writing.
I'll give him a buzz in the afternoon. Going to have some lunch first, though, I think. All right. We had better leave it there. As ever, thank you very much indeed for being here. Keep everything crossed for the weekend, that we can do the business in the Derby on Sunday. Whatever happens, whether the morning is goodly or badly, we'll be with you on Monday to talk about it. We will have a preview pod for Patreon members. Not entirely sure when, but it will be out over the weekend at some point. So until the next one.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.